We are next week going to be talking about a new ministry that we'll be rolling out officially next Sunday morning called Cable Free for Christ. What it's really about is it's the brainchild of one of our members, and he has set up a website. If you want to know about it and get a jump start, you can go to cablefreeforchrist.org and look at it. And basically, it's a website encouraging people to cut out their cable or cut back on their cable, or I'm going to add, cut back on your internet or whatever. And in order to make a difference and clean up your life, and at the same time make a difference with ministries that can make a difference. And this will be set up so you can go to the website and you can decide to donate directly on the website on a regular basis to one of several ministries that our elders have vetted. And one of those that we are really, really impressed with is Helping Hands International. Healing, yes. God's Helping Hands. I keep getting that confused. Healing Hands International. And Healing Hands International, you'll learn about from Brother Ron. Many of you may know Brother Ron White and his wife Donna. Most of you probably don't, though. Ron's been a gospel preacher for over 50 years. His last full-time ministry was in Lincoln Park, where he preached for about 26 and a half years. I've known Ron since I moved up here 24 years ago and have always admired him. And we spent a lot of time together on our way to Chicago and back with the National Crusade for Christ that was held back in the early 90s. Got to know each other a lot better. Were you the one that told me the story about the Methodist that used your baptistry?
Okay,
and I thought so. Anyway, off the subject, but Ron is now, since he retired, and Marilyn and I had the privilege of going to his retirement party. I called it a graduation party earlier. He said that wasn't off the mark. His retirement party, and I'll tell you what, those people really loved Donna and Ron too, I guess, based on what I saw of that party. It was obvious that he had done a marvelous work and that he was highly respected by the brethren there at Allen Park. Excuse me, I keep saying Allen, Lincoln Park, and a lot of other people in the area. And so at this time, he's going to tell us a little bit about this. But I want to emphasize again that the nice thing about Cable Free for Christ is you'll be able to set up regular donations to this and a couple of other places. But one of the things we're really looking for with Cable Free for Christ is not only us, but this is a site where we can encourage other congregations and Christians literally all over the world to come and make a difference. So without further ado, Brother Ron White.
Thank you, David, for that kind introduction. Now, I think they were celebrating that we were leaving Lincoln Park after 26 years. But we did have a big party and thoroughly enjoyed it. Been looking forward to coming to Waterford for a long time to tell the good news. In fact, it's been on my bucket list. Anticipating that we would see several that we could call to mind that were at Waterford or might be, and then surprised numerous times this morning by folks coming to us and making connections again from experiences of the past. I have preached for a long time, but I say repeatedly, I think that maybe the Lord was using all of that time as preparation for the current ministry. Because truly, I bring you good news. And I'm going to frame it within a couple of scriptures. Since it's a Bible class, maybe that's not a bad idea. In Luke chapter 4, beginning at verse 18, we find the context being that Jesus has returned once his ministry has begun. He's come now back to Capernaum. Excuse me, back to Nazareth. Come to the synagogue in his hometown for the first time. And he's given the privilege of reading the scripture that day. Handed the scroll of Isaiah. He unrolls it all the way to chapter 61. There are 66 chapters as we've divided it in Isaiah. And he made his inaugural address with these words, beginning at verse 18 in Luke 4, "The Spirit of the Lord is on me because he has anointed me to preach good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners and recovery of sight for the blind, to release the oppressed, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." And then if you'll do what I sometimes lead people through but don't have the time this morning, if you will at least scan the next several chapters, you'll see that what Jesus meant and why Luke records this is to tell us that Jesus came to do more than just preach. He did preach, and he put that foremost. But immediately Luke begins to record the miracles of healing and feeding the people, etc., that Jesus did. And when they would come, he would not say, "I'll do this miracle for you," or "I'll heal you," or "I'll make you better," or "I'll feed your belly if you'll come to church." He just did for the people because they had a need. And oftentimes they listened to him preach the gospel. The other scripture with which I'm framing this, being the other parentheses, would be Matthew chapter 25. Not going to read it at this point. You know it well. It's the judgment scene. You and I are all going to be in this scene someday. And Jesus says, "Those who go to eternal life are those who have fed the hungry, given drink to the thirsty, visited those who are sick and in prison." Jesus is saying to the church, "Church, we know what it takes to become a Christian. Let me tell you what it takes to be a Christian. You've got to look out for those around you." And Healing Hands International seeks to do that. We are a humanitarian relief organization. In Nashville, we're on McNally Drive, just one block north of the zoo, just right across the railroad tracks from the zoo. So you come to Nashville, you want to come visit us, and we invite you to do that. Have a tour. Look for the signs leading to the zoo, or ask anybody where the zoo is. And we're just across the railroad tracks and one block north off of Nolensville Road. We also, of late, have an office and warehouse in Fort Worth, Texas. You'd be welcome there too, but I wouldn't get to see you. A humanitarian relief 501c3 organization, and all board and all staff are members of the Churches of Christ. Thus, we are Christians in an organization that serves the church in doing its mission work, its evangelism, and its benevolence. We want to help the church. Our mission is to demonstrate godly love by gathering the medical, agricultural, educational, and relief supplies that America sometimes has in abundance and shipping them then to the poor and the hurting where they're needed. We want to gather goods and do projects for Churches of Christ in this part of the world. In other words, the church says, "We have a missionary overseas in a certain location, and he says they need clean water, or they need antibiotics, or they need vitamins for the children." And we say, "Are you willing to support this project, and to what degree? We'll help you as you help us do what you ask us to do. We'll do what you ask us to do. We'll send it to the missionary or mission point. They distribute in the name of Christ and his church without discrimination." So when I go out to civic clubs, I make no bone about the fact that we are a Church of Christ group of people. We're begging money from the Churches of Christ to do the work that Christ gave to his church, but we serve people without discrimination, and we're glad to do it. They distribute in the name of Christ and maybe have an opportunity to preach the gospel to those folks. We want to soften the hearts of people so they'll hear the gospel preached. We want to soften the regulations of governments, and I'll mention Cuba in a little bit and elaborate a bit further. We want to raise awareness of the church in a community and convey the love of Jesus and Christians, and we want to glorify God. We want to care for the physical needs of the poor and the hurting of the world, because we have a world out there that's hurting. Just as a bit of an example, and to kind of set the pattern or the framework, 5,000 children a day in our world die because of impure water. And 5,000 die tomorrow because of impure water, and they will die the next day because of impure water. You think 5,000 children dying in airplane accidents in one day would get our attention? What about if it were to happen every day this week and every week thereafter, unless we do something to get clean water to them? You add to that the malnutrition problem. You add to that the preventable diseases and illnesses problem. And 24,000 children a day die of preventable causes. That's not even taking into account the adults that die from these same causes. So we've got a big task out there. There's a hurting world out there, a world to serve. And what did Jesus say? He came not to be served, but to serve. If we're going to walk in his steps, we're going to be doing the sort of things that he said he came to do. And you know, when you then approach people the way Jesus did, doing good for them first, oftentimes you have an opportunity to preach the gospel to them. But we don't do the preaching. I sometimes say, like the old BASF chemical company commercial, we don't make the cars, we just make them better. We don't make the bowling balls, we just make them better. We don't do the preaching. We don't send out missionaries. But we help the missionaries do their job. I don't have time this morning to tell you how Healing Hands got started, other than to say it started on Lipscomb University's campus in a professor's classroom. They decided to do a humanitarian relief project in Romania. And in the last 20 years, we have since shipped to 73 different countries in more than 460 containers of 40-foot truck. The trucks are pulled to the port, and we'll see more about that in a minute. But church, generous Christians, through the church and individually, have allowed us to send in excess of $100 million worth of goods overseas. Doesn't that just blow your mind? Sometimes we get down in the mouth about the state of the church. We just get so discouraged about the way things are going in our generation. And what's the next generation going to do? Of course, the next one will do worse than we did. That's the way we think. But in the last 20 years, $100 million worth in wholesale dollars, conservatively stated, has been given to those who have benevolent needs. On average, we send a container every 9 days. They're pulled to the port, they're put on a container ship, and they go overseas to some port of the world. The types of aid that we deliver: medical supplies and equipment, educational supplies, agricultural aid and training, water well drilling, and emergency relief aid. I'll mention each of those, at least in brief, and hopefully we'll have some time for questions at the end. Medical aid. We've received goods, meaning that we've been able to outfit, equip whole clinics and hospitals in Central America and in Africa. We've received soft goods like examination gloves and syringes and other things that are needed in doctors' offices and hospitals. We've received medications by the tens and hundreds of millions of dollars in value and shipped overseas. For instance, Jared Brown, a missionary from Middle Tennessee, sees a relatively young man, been down in Honduras for more than 10 years, established a great mission point down there, Mission Lazarus. But Jared was driving through town one day, and he saw a young lady making her way across the street with flip-flops on her hands. He didn't know her, but obviously he knew that she had a problem. She can't walk. He turned his truck around, came back, approached her quietly so as not to arouse any attention to her. And he said, "Don't you have a wheelchair?" She said, "Well, I used to have, but it's broken and unfixable." He said, "You just stay right here, and I'll be back in a few minutes with a wheelchair for you." Learned her name was Hilma sometime that day. Well, Hilma used the time that he was gone to tell everybody what that American was going to do for her. And by the time he got back with the wheelchair, she generated a whole crowd, and they happily lifted her up into the wheelchair and posed in the second picture. And he sent us those two pictures that same day, and in his email said it was thanks to Healing Hands International that he had a wheelchair in his little warehouse to give to Hilma. Now, she's not a member of the church, so far as I know. She wasn't then. But he saw a person in need. He could do something about it, and he did so because others were making it possible for him to do that. There's a picture of latex gloves on a steel rack in Cuba. I'm going to let you look at that a minute. What does that say? It says those gloves have been used and washed and dried, and used and washed and dried, and I could go on and on. They don't want it that way. That's a surgical hospital. Could be any one of many third world countries. Just happened to have this picture of Cuba. I venture to say if you're going to the doctor or going to have surgery, you don't want used gloves on the doctor's and nurse's hands administered to you. They don't want it either. So if we can give a box of gloves, we're doing a great thing for quite a number of people. And we've shipped a lot of medical supplies to Cuba, millions of dollars worth of medical supplies to Cuba, back when only approved folks could do that, and that's still the case today. We've shipped four ambulances to Cuba and one to Nicaragua, and those are the best ambulances in those countries. They were used up as far as Americans were concerned. We took them. We refurbished them. We sent them on their way full of stock, and those countries have received ambulances. And we can do so because of pencils. I got to make this story brief. But there was a day when our boss received a telephone call from Shelbyville, Tennessee. And the call was, "Could you use pencils in your work?" We'd never had them, didn't know how we'd use them. We'd never given it any thought. But he said yes. And so the next thing he heard about it was another telephone call, this time from the warehouse man, saying there's a semi-truck driver here with a whole semi-load of pencils. But he's apologizing because loads 2 and 3 won't arrive for a few more days. He's got to go back to Shelbyville and get them. We went from having no pencils to being covered up with pencils. A few days after that, Dr. Randy Steger was walking through the warehouse and he saw a load of medical supplies for Cuba being loaded, and it was kind of going, eh. He said, "Put some of those boxes of pencils on there so as to stabilize that load." Now, we didn't even list them on the manifest because to us, they were just packing material. When it got down to Cuba, the hospital administrators met to divide up the medical supplies. They knew what to do with those, but they didn't know what to do with the pencils. They'd never had them, but they knew they'd run out. Doctors, nurses, hospitals didn't have pencils. But they said the school children don't have pencils either. And so they gave them to school children. Well, it wasn't long till another telephone call from Cuba. Minister of Education, do you think you could send more pencils for our school children? How many do you need? Well, quick lesson in communism, you do for one, you do for everyone. And so we sent a whole 40-foot container load of pencils down there. And on subsequent shipments, we've shipped more pencils. It's estimated we've shipped more than 4 million pencils to Cuba. And there came a day when into every public school classroom, a Christian went and passed out pencils, one per child. Estimated that between 80 and 90% of the homes in Cuba had at least one child come home and say, "Look, Mama, what I got from a member of the Church of Christ." Government came to our brethren, said, "You think you have 5 Churches of Christ in Cuba? We're telling you that in reality there are 137 Churches of Christ. We know where all the underground churches are, who they are, when they meet." And they put our brethren back in fellowship. Our brethren were only aware of 5 that were registered with the government and allowed to operate publicly. Now there were 137. And as of 2 or 3 years ago when I asked, there were more than 180. They're very evangelistic people, seeking to save souls. And the government lets us do most anything down there, because we've sent so many pencils. When those $25,000 worth of pencils were received, that made all the publicity. And so more pencils. But I was down there in 2008, I believe it was, at their national preachers meeting. Now, when the government said, "You've got 137 churches," our brethren said, "You know, it used to be that we'd have national meetings. May we continue to do that?" And the government said, "Yes." First year, 200 people showed up. Second year, 400 people showed up. Third year, they were expecting 600 people and didn't know where they would meet. Government didn't know either. Somebody had to figure it out, and the government proposed, "Why don't you use our National Capitol building?" Let that soak in a little bit. That's like the elders here being asked, why not bring 600 people to the U.S. House of Representatives and just occupy that for a week? You can't imagine it, and I can't either. They couldn't imagine it in Cuba. But in the same auditorium, same building where communism had been preached for, at that time, more than 40 years, the gospel was preached from that same rostrum for a week. Well, I went to the 9th annual conference, and I met Yacanir. He speaks Spanish, I speak English. Ne'er the twain shall meet, except we had a translator. And I learned his story. He had, at age 7, received a pencil in school, started attending the nearest Church of Christ, and at age 10, he was baptized at Bella Vista. His parents didn't attend then. They still don't, as far as I know. Here he was at age 12, attending the National Preachers Meeting. Now, assuming that nothing else were to happen after that time, do you think that 4 million pencils is too great a price to pay for Yacanir's soul? I've never heard anybody challenge that. But how many more will he win to Christ in his lifetime? He certainly got a lot of great mentors and examples around him. Remind me, if we have time, tell the Nigerian pencil story. Educational aid. I've mentioned pencils. We've shipped those to many places, and these other things that you see listed. And more recently, we've been shipping laptop and desktop computers that folks have given, mainly companies. And we have 3 men, retirees, who know how to do it, and they fix up these computers and prepare them for going overseas. And so we're into the computer business. Let's talk about agricultural aid. We've done all of these things and continue to do so all the time, including, notice the bottom, irrigation, the irrigation supplies. We sent this tractor and all these implements for a Memphis church over to their preacher training school in Lusaka, Zambia. Did that a couple years ago. and we teach drip irrigation. That's why I brought the bucket. With the bucket, you take a 5-gallon bucket, you attach these plastic these plastic connectors, and 100 feet of hose, lay them out on a raised plant bed that you've been taught how to make and how to tend, and you can grow 100 feet of vegetables. And in most parts of the world, or many parts of the world, they have adequate heat but not adequate rain. But if you got adequate water source, they can grow 3 crops a year. That's year-round. Feed a family of 7 with a bucket and those simple hoses and the technology that goes along with it, which takes a little study, but it can be learned. It takes a lot of sweat from the brow, but it can be done. You feed a family of 7 with 1 bucket. Well, of course, you could feed 14 with 2 buckets. You could feed 21 with 3, and on it goes. You can soon be feeding a whole community, a congregation, and having food to sell as an income. I'll illustrate that in just a moment. Before we put it down, this is a water filter, which we've learned about, that will purify just most any water to the point 99.99999%. And you can, with one bucket being used 24 hours, you can purify enough water to give water to 150 people, 300 gallons. So that's a great blessing, and we've been using that. But we move on. Irrigation makes a coffee bush go from 2 berries to a whole lot of berries. In Ethiopia in 1999, this young lad was dying of malnutrition. He was pretty far gone at that time. But in 2007, in the same part of the world, same area of Ethiopia, these happy, smiling faces, because their parents had learned drip irrigation. And when I went to, I'll get to that in a moment, this is some of the crops grown in Ethiopia by drip irrigation. How many of you farmers and gardeners grow better looking vegetables than that? I've had one brother to hold up his hand in one congregation, and I started to kid with him, and they said, no, he's a master gardener. I backed off. But it does a great job. And the student preachers, the part of the curriculum in many of the preacher training schools is to work for an hour a day in the garden, learning how to grow crops by drip irrigation. And so the graduates can go home and do as this brother has done, dig a pond, put his garden all around it. He's got a large family. I've seen the picture of his family. But he grows enough vegetables to have an income that he can be a full-time preacher as well, because he's a full-time gardener. And there are many humbly preaching the gospel because they're humble farmers. Irrigation feeds hungry children, and we've seen too many pictures like this, haven't we? But in Zambia, I saw these children whose parents used drip irrigation. And they're happy and well-fed, and by the time I got to the second or third picture, they were putting stones and leaves on their heads and kind of doing like that, you know, how children do around the world to each other. We've seen pictures like this and wonder if what we could do to help this child so ill that he cannot even brush away the flies or hold up his head. And I'm telling you that through Healing Hands International, we address this problem in a big way, and I can only touch the hem of the garment. There's drinking water, as it is quite often in so many parts of the world. How many want to drink out of that cup? I didn't think so. Maybe because the water's taken from a pond like this where the animals use it, it's full of diseases. Or maybe that get to drinking water like this and the bathing water like the pond there. And if the girls have the job of getting the water, they've got no time to go to school. Because on average, the women and the girls who have the job of doing it have to make a 3.7-mile trip to retrieve water. And what are they bringing home? Dirty water for cooking, cleaning, bathing, etc. Estimated by the World Health Organization that 80% of childhood diseases around the world are caused by impure water. 50% of the childhood deaths are caused by impure water. So when you drill a well and put a pump on it, put a pad around it to keep the area clean, and you've done so right in the village, that puts the water just outside the door. Takes away the trips. It's clean water, becomes the second most precious thing in a community, and I'll tell you what's first in a moment. Over 400 wells have been drilled in Ethiopia. There's over 1 million precious souls in Ethiopia today drinking pure water because of generous Christians who've drilled wells. Nearly 500 wells have been drilled in Ethiopia by now. And oft times a congregation is started in that community. And the preachers come from the preacher training schools or congregations nearby, and they preach the living water. That's the first most precious thing in that community. There have been hundreds of drip irrigation workshops in more than 14 sub-Saharan countries in Africa in the last 10 years. There have been thousands of trainees. And of late, we've been inviting some Muslims to come, the neighbors, to come and learn drip irrigation. The Christians host them. The Muslims come as their guests. The beginning of the week, they're standing in separate groups and they're looking daggers at each other. By the middle of the week, they're beginning to appreciate each other. And they've learned to talk a little bit. By the end of the week, when they get their graduation certificates, they're hugging on each other's necks and crying because they're going to be going their separate ways. But one Muslim woman attended drip irrigation, grow your crops, survival gardening workshop, and she said, "You're teaching us to grow vegetables that we've never grown before. We don't know how to prepare them for the table. And you're teaching us to grow in such quantity that we don't know how to preserve till the next crop comes in." And so our director of agriculture, David Goolsby, came back, got a bunch of women with him, his wife and some others, some missionary wives from other parts of the world. They met in Nigeria, and they taught a food preparation and preservation workshop and have been doing so on additional occasions. Here's some of those ladies' pictures. More recently, we've hired Ebenezer and Regina Udofia, Nigerians, who've been transplanted now to Kenya to work with the Great Commission School in Nairobi. And they go out to teach these workshops. He teaching how to grow the crops, Regina teaching the women. And their little daughter Grace, and you see how she's grown up in recent months. And she's expecting to be a big sister soon. So the family grows. And there's Ebenezer in the top picture showing growing the crops and how to do it. And Regina down here teaching the women. And the gentleman standing by a rabbit hutch, because we're also teaching how to raise rabbits and chickens and fish and goats and sheep and such like. And you not only have the animals, the meat to eat, but you've got fertilizer for the garden. Our African brethren say that drip irrigation is the best answer to confront Islam outside of the Bible. So agriculture we're depending on and using in an ongoing basis, full time. Water well drilling going on full time. One of the things that we do annually is the Magi Project, making up of Christmas gifts in a shoebox-sized container. And the year that I went to work for Healing Hands was 2004. They had just shipped 4,000 Christmas gifts to Honduras. Last year, we shipped 14,000. And we expect probably to send more this year, because when I left town, they were rolling in. I mean, just people coming, bringing their gifts by the tens, the hundreds of gifts at a time. So we distribute the gifts down there. We have a group that goes down each December, the week before Christmas, to distribute gifts. Well, I went down in 2009 to distribute gifts. Was really enjoying the thing and meeting the children and seeing those great smiles. And I decided to take a trail ride. I didn't have to do that. I shouldn't have done that. Because I got about a city block, hadn't even gotten to the trail yet, when the horse and I had a major disagreement and she put me off. In a most unceremonious way, she broke my face. She separated my pelvis. And I had to be transported to the hospital in the capital. And the next day was flown by emergency evacuation flight back to Nashville, Tennessee. So I got home before the rest of the group got home. But I was in the hospital about 3 days. Before Donna got me home, we heard on the car radio that a great earthquake had happened in Haiti. And with that, I looked over at Donna and I said, I think I know why I'm going back to work tomorrow. I'm on a mission, you see. Great earthquake, January the 12th, 2010. It was a city, Port-au-Prince, that was well prepared for facing hurricanes, but they hadn't had an earthquake in over 250 years. And it collapsed on them because it's very poorly made concrete houses. So we sent doctors over there, and we sent nurses over there. These nurses were Americans in Honduras. They went for us. We started shipping a lot of things. We've shipped as much as 15 containers and probably more by now. We bought $300,000 worth of narcotics type medicines in Honduras that we couldn't buy in the United States. They needed them for the amputations that were going on. We sent a survey team down there, and the gentleman in the Alabama shirts, a deacon down in Decatur, Alabama, and he's spent about half of his time since then. Now, it's been more than a year and a half. But as our representative distributing aid, we only deal with trusted brethren, whether it be our own brethren on this end or brethren over there. We only deal with trusted brethren so that we know that things are done right. We don't go through government any more than necessary. And we don't just send to the other end and let them do with it as they choose to do. We send to trusted brethren. And he makes that possible. Sees to it. Our water well driller in Ethiopia was back in the States at the time. And he let us know that he used to drill wells in Haiti. He said, may I go down and do that again? And so we sent him down there. He drilled the first well. The machine wouldn't work anymore after the first one. And so through his connections, we were able to buy a new rig, a refurbished rig, that is. And we've drilled over 40 wells in Haiti now. Refugee camps, orphanages, church buildings, schools. We continue to send building materials. We're teaching how to use drip irrigation, setting up small businesses, shipping for them. Got this picture just a couple weeks back. Of a school, we provided the materials, and another group of folks built the building, and it's in operation now, better building than they had before. We encourage women's groups to become Dorcas groups or sewing groups. This is a group from Lincoln Park that had sewed some blankets, and many women are making dresses. In our congregation, the women have just in the last few weeks sewed over 600 pillowcase dresses for the girls of Haiti. How many times have you seen not one but many ships on dry land? That's the way it was after the earthquake and tsunami in Japan. I'm not going to have time to show it this morning. We're going to leave with you about a 9-minute video of what has gone on and how we've been involved in Japan follow-up. So you can be looking at that some future time. Right now, the crisis in emergency is the hunger, malnutrition in the Horn of Africa. And I began to get telephone calls. What are you doing? Who are you working with over there? We want to do it in a way that we can feel confident about how it's being done. And so we found that Christian Relief Fund had people on the front line, including the president of that organization, on the front line over there distributing aid. And so we helped them buy the product where they can buy it and get it to these camps that maybe you've seen about on the news, and some of them have been ignored by the news and they were in even worse shape than the ones that have been advertised. These names are the names of camps where they've been giving aid. Each year we have a Walk for Water in Nashville. Get that four in the middle there? 3.7 miles, 4 miles. And we've had the fifth one now in Nashville back in the spring. Raised $35,000 to drill wells in one day. But there's also a Walk for Water in Lincoln Park. There has been one over in Windsor a couple of times. The state of Washington, the state of Georgia, and other places these Walks for Water crop up. Check our website, and we'll have our next one in April next year. The women annually have a Women of Hope Conference, and it's a wonderful event. I know because I get to go serve the women, and they have a great time. It would be worth you women spending your money to get on an airplane or get in the van and drive down there to take this in. The women just are so blessed by that Women of Hope Conference. Have I forgotten anything? Nigerian pencil story, maybe? In 2006, we learned of a man in Jos, Nigeria, a preacher and teacher at the preacher training school. Name is Simon DeBish. Simon had received a box of pencils. He doesn't know how or why, but that was 12 gross of pencils. He and his wife, dressed in clothes that would not offend their Muslim neighbors, went out and visited with their Muslim neighbors, the adults, and gave a pencil to each child that they encountered until they'd given all their pencils. Didn't really know how to feel about it afterwards, other than the fact that maybe you can identify there were days you didn't want to go to the nursing home, but you went anyway and felt better afterwards. Or you went to the hospital, made that visit, and felt better afterwards. Well, that's kind of the way they felt. But 6 months after that, a mob gathered in town and said to their leader, when they had called him, we intend to go through town and burn down all the Christian church buildings. He said, I approve of what you plan to do. But, he says, we will not burn down the building of the man who gave our children pencils. And so they went through town burning down church buildings till they came to the Church of Christ. It had a circle of people around it, protecting it and crying out, this is the church, the building of the man who gave our children pencils. 3 months after that, Simon was coming back in from a nearby village, didn't know that another mob had gathered. They captured him. They bound him. They put him in the back of a pickup truck. They showed him the long-bladed knife with which they planned to execute him. But they paused long enough to call for their leader to give him the honor of doing the execution. When he arrived, it was the same man that had spoken up before. He looked in the back of the pickup truck. He saw that it was Simon DeBish. He said, no, we will not kill the man who gave our children pencils. And so they unbound him, and they accompanied him home to a family that thought he was already dead. Now that kind of makes the hair stand up on the back of your neck, doesn't it? And just to be sure that I tell the story straight, I saw Simon in Zambia later that year, and I went through that story line by line, and he agreed that every word that I'm telling you is the gospel truth. But it made me think, if God can use pencils to save lives, but it took the blood of Jesus to cleanse us of our sins, made me ask, how much do we owe him? And how much are we committing to doing for him on a daily basis? Thank you for your kind attention.